is extra.
Hour number two, Extra 1360. Speaking of the Farmers Insurance Open, which starts on Wednesday, Marty Gorsuch, CEO of the Farmers Insurance Open, joined us Friday, Darren and Jack. Interesting, interesting spot. And one thing we agreed on, you know, like, and we, this is a Xander Schauffele house. Everybody knows we love Xander. We've known Xander for a really long time. We met him at the Farmers Insurance Open. But I'll tell you know who's doing more for San Diego tourism than any other golfer on planet Earth, including those who were born and raised here? John Rahm. San Diego needs to put John Rahm on the payroll. That man, every time he shows up here, whether it's the U.S. Open, Torrey Pines, he talks about his family, he talks about how much he loves it, how it reminds him of growing up in Basque Country in Spain. Nobody, no golfer has done more for San Diego regional tourism than John Rahm.
He got engaged here.
Yes, he did, at Torrey Pines, won the U.S. Open here. And the man has been an absolute blessing. Not that the city doesn't sell itself, but John Rahm needs to be hired by the Tourism Authority. He is the most San Diegan golfer that we have playing in the field starting on Wednesday. It should be unique. I think it's going to be really interesting. And like, we know that some of this was circumstantial, not wanting to go head-to-head with the championship games on Sunday. But I also think that as we were talking to Marty Gorsuch, the CEO of the Farmers Insurance Open, he made a great point. Like, we get prime time Friday, Saturday. Like, that's exciting stuff on the weekend to go Friday, Saturday into prime time. It's really going to do well for the turn. I don't know that it's going to be a trend in golf, but, you know, it may be here. You know, it might be a little bit more complicated because there's an extra weekday and one less weekend, finishing on a Sunday, not a Saturday, but I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to really, really do well for the tournament. Let's say hello to Will Brinson. Will Brinson is the host of the Pick Six podcast, which you might guess is about football. He is a reporter for CBS who covers the NFL as well, and he joins us on Extra 1360. Good afternoon, Will Brinson.
What's going on, Darren? Hope you're doing well. Love the Farmers. Love anything at Torrey. All things, I thought you were going to say, you know who does more for San Diego tourism, Will Brinson. I was like, well, I don't know how he's going to jam that one in there. But yeah, dude, John Rahm. Fantastic. I believe, man, I'm pretty sure I hit Patrick Reed outright here last year, but I could be wrong. I had a bunch of golf outrights last year. Excited for this weekend and excited for, like, golf DFS starting on a Wednesday instead of a Thursday. How delightful.
Absolutely. I think it's great. Like I said, we know the CEO pretty well. He was talking about all the benefits. And it's not just, well, we don't have to, you know, go head-to-head with the NFL on Sunday, AFC-NFC championship games. Well, it's like, we get to be in primetime on Fridays and Saturdays. That's a pretty cool place for CBS to be in the end of the weekend.
Well, yeah, it's an extremely cool place to be going to the weekend. You get, Nance won't be there because he'll be calling the football.
I think he's doing virtual. I think he's going to do it from remote.
Oh, is he really?
I think so. I thought I read that.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's awesome. When I hit an outright, I like to buy a rope hat from the course that's at. I don't see a Farmers Open rope hat, but I do have a U.S. Open Torrey Pines rope hat that I'm currently holding in my hand. Delightful little hat. So maybe I'll have to purchase one for the Farmers Open, or you can just get me one in the mail.
I think it would probably be the latter. We don't need you purchasing stuff. It's here. We'll get it. We'll ship it off to Raleigh, North Carolina. It'll be there before you know it. Or maybe we'll save it. We'll give it to you at the Super Bowl since you're coming to Los Angeles, right?
Yeah, coming to Los Angeles in like 3 weeks. Excited for it. We should have. I think it'd be pretty tough to get a bad game at this point. You know, maybe like the worst possible scenario is what, like Niners Bengals, and even that, you know, the highest rated Super Bowl of all time was actually the 49ers and Bengals. Now, sort of some different players and different stars, but I don't think that we're going to get robbed of a good game or some star power in this one, no matter what.
Well, I've been on the air now for a little bit more than an hour today, and I jokingly said in the first hour of the show, I don't know where it is, but I'm sure out there someplace, you know, there's like the older football fan who's bellyaching a lot about defense and, yeah, how does Cooper Kupp get behind the defense and what was going on with Tyreek and how come nobody's guarding George, you know, or you know what I'm saying? Anybody doing that today, or is anybody just still like super high on the euphoria from the weekend that was?
Yeah, I think it's more of the latter. I think there are definitely questions about not necessarily defense, but maybe coaching decision making.
Sure.
For instance, you know, Sean McDermott at the end of the game against the Chiefs, you know, he could have, if he squib kicks it, and then instructs his defenders to hold all of the receivers on the Chiefs team one time, which is legal. The NFL changed it in 2017, and you can't do it more than once. You know, otherwise, it resets the clock. And John Harbaugh and the Ravens managed to end a game by doing that. I mean, it's a really smart tactic. But, you know, you could have squib kicked it, melt like 4 seconds off, hold the guys on the Chiefs, melt another 4 seconds off, take the 5-yard penalty, and all of a sudden Patrick Mahomes would have had, you know, one play and not a, you know, and getting 25 yards wouldn't have mattered. They wouldn't have enough time to get it down there and call the timeout, more than likely, which they were able to do and send it to overtime. So that's one. Bruce Arians said after the game against the loss to the Rams, if they tied it up, they blitzed six guys. They sent six guys after Matthew Stafford for the first time all game. Matthew Stafford, number one quarterback against the blitz in the NFL this year. The rush almost got home. It didn't. And they had Cooper Kupp on that deep route. And, you know, Arians also said that there was, you know, some miscommunication between the players. Not every defensive player got the call. And then, you know, the Packers game, you have, I think, Troy and Joe were talking about, like, yeah, Matt LaFleur told us in the production meeting, he said, I hope my special teams don't come back to bite me in this game. It's like, well, that's not funny. Like, why are you laughing about that? Because it bit you multiple times. And then I'm trying to think if there was a major coaching. I feel like, you know, there's a lack of defense, but that's sort of, you know, par for the course in the NFL. It felt more like coaching, special teams were a big storyline just because of these razor thin margins in these playoff games, Darren, between, you know, a bunch of really good teams who were just in crazy battles in what is very arguably the greatest weekend of professional football we've ever seen.
Yeah, I'm with you 1,000%. And no objection to anybody who calls it the greatest weekend that we've ever seen, because I can't come up with one top of my head that's been better. Somebody will do a deep dive on that, I'm sure, later in the week, but whatever. Neither here nor there. Will Brinson joining us on Extra 1360. Will, what was the indelible image of the weekend? I mean, it's hard to pick just one, but if there was one for you, like, what was the moment you're like, wow, I'm going to be talking about that, thinking about that for a really long time?
I think you could almost, it's weird. I've done, you know, like 4 or 5 radio hits today. And anytime somebody, you know, you'll probably, you know, people ask me about, like, Bengals Titans, I'm like, that feels like it was 10 weeks ago. Like, I had group chats that didn't have a text sent to them with, like, you know, 10 plus people on them, didn't have a text sent to them before noon, because I think everyone was just so, like, football hungover, right? And I mean, it was an intense weekend. Like, I felt mentally and physically exhausted. Yeah, I know, it's just watching football and talking about it, but it just, you know, it's just a lot. And the games are so intense. But I would say that if I had to pick, I mean, the finalist for me would probably be the block punt by the 49ers. And then, of course, the throw to Cooper Kupp. You know, when you see Stafford uncork it, you're like, holy cow, that's going deep. And you like, and all of a sudden it's just Kupp has a step and a half on him. And then potentially, yeah, and then the other one would probably be the Travis Kelce touchdown, or the Travis Kelce catch for 25 yards to set up the field goal. Although, so many moments in that Bills Chiefs game that you hate to really even pick one, because there's a 4th-and-13 touchdown. You know, Gabe Davis going nuts. I think those would probably be my three finalists.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill. I mean, that ridiculous play where Hill scores the final 2 minutes of that one as well. What was your favorite? You know, you work in sports media. Our industry is flooded with nuggets, right? Like with all sorts of data, statistical information. I'll give you an example, so I'll give you a second to think about it. One of my favorite is Matthew Stafford just won his second consecutive playoff game, right? Second playoff game ever, which is one more than the Detroit Lions have won since 1967. Oh, yeah. Is there one statistic, personal statistic, team statistic, or one or two if you can't narrow it down, like, that really has jumped out to you that you'd just be like, wow, like, that's a ridiculous thing even to think about following that weekend?
I mean, I know this is a terrible – I'm not sure, man. That's terrible. For me, it was probably more about the – it wasn't even a statistical nugget. I felt like it was more about, like, the quotes that came out and, you know, like, Andy Reid – after the game, asked what he told Patrick Mahomes You know, he's like, he looked at Mahomes, he said, when it's grim, go be the Grim Reaper. I mean, what a line that is. Matthew Stafford was talking about it and said that he was like talking about, you know, the throw down the field. He's like, sometimes you got to go steal somebody's soul, which is something I say all the time on Twitter, which I wonder. So I found that a little surprising. I know what it was. This is my favorite one by far. I was sort of filibustering there to try and find it because I knew it was in my Twitter feed somewhere. The Chiefs moved 44 yards game time field goal in less time than it took for Dak to run the quarterback draw last weekend. I think that's like my favorite stat because it defines, you know, Andy Reid, not the greatest clock management guy in the world, obviously, but you know he holds on to his timeouts. But man, was he glad he had him at the end of that game. And you know, it's just like a good organization that's probably going to win several Super Bowls, and a poorly run group that, you know, it hasn't made it to the divisional playoffs since like 1996, or divisional round since like 1996. I mean, it's such a stark contrast right there.
You can make a case that of the quarterbacks that we see advancing to the conference championship games, like you said, it feels like it was 10 weeks ago. You can make a case, you know, whether or not it's you know, the case that would win in a broader conversation. But Joe Burrow being sacked 9 times on the road, first time ever into the postseason, and then just as cool as a cucumber afterwards, Will. Like the future's so bright. I don't know where it goes, right? Like you said, I mean, it might end up in SoFi Stadium. Who knows? Who can tell? They played a ridiculous game not that long ago, Cincinnati and Kansas City did. But watching him take the beating that he did, something that we knew was a bugaboo for Cincinnati all season long, and then figuring that thing out at the end, him and Ja'Marr Chase, like, man, like, I don't know. You could certainly make the case that of all the quarterback play that we watched this weekend, like, nobody exhibited a level of toughness, demeanor quite like Joe Burrow.
Yeah, it's interesting because on one side you have Mahomes and Matthew Stafford, right? And they're the, you know, just the physical freaks. Like, I mean, I know people don't put Matthew Stafford in the same boat as Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, and I get it, they're younger, they scream more upside, but dude, I mean, Matthew Stafford can whip the ball, and he was making some great plays against the Buccaneers. I thought that it was, you know, it's interesting because, well, we talked 2 weeks ago, you know, the day of the, you know, Rams and Cardinals playoff game, in wild card weekend, I guess, was that last week? I guess it was last week, my God. that was 7 days ago. Okay, never mind. you pointed out to me, you're like, you know, all the pressure's on Stafford. It hadn't really dawned on me. And, you know, they go out and they crush the Cardinals. The difference was, I thought that in this game, Stafford, he dragged the Rams to the win.
Right.
You know, when the Rams were trying to lose, he found a way to get them that win. I think that really more than anything takes the monkey off his back. But you have him and Mahomes, right? It's these athletic freak shows. And then you have, you know, Joe Burrow, who's an elite prospect. I mean, he's an elite quarterback already. Like, I mean, he's got tons of upside. I think the Bengals and the Chargers are the only teams that can, like, feel remotely comfortable about being in the AFC with Allen and Mahomes for the next 10 years. I mean, and then you have Jimmy G, right? Who's, yeah, I mean, very good quarterback, but, you know, often criticized. And Jimmy G and Burrow, you know, the dichotomy of these two freak shows and then these two guys who, you know, Jimmy G's playing through a separate, like, a strained shoulder and a busted hand. I mean, and Burrow just getting sacked over and over and over again. They just got off the mat. I mean, just an incredible amount of toughness by the two underdog quarterbacks in championship weekend, which I don't think can be discounted. It'll be easy to look at these teams and say, okay, you know, the Chiefs, you know, kept blowtorching the Bills defense with this incredible, unstoppable offense. And, you know, the Rams were just annihilating the Buccaneers, in the past game. Like, they're going to crush these other two teams. But there is some toughness for those underdogs that I don't think you can necessarily count out.
You mentioned Garoppolo, you know, and a lot of these numbers themselves. I know not everybody's into win-loss record having to be attached to quarterbacks. Hey, whatever. 13-10, though, going in, you know, obviously, Will, we have to talk about Aaron Rodgers, you know, because it's very much been a season about Aaron Rodgers from the offseason into the regular season on a bunch of different levels. And, you know, where it goes from here is anybody's guess. But, you know, if it were to end today, like, you know, Aaron's as great as we've seen, but what do you make of what's going on with him in the postseason, save for one season where he went on the road three consecutive weeks, went out and won a Super Bowl 12 years ago or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, look, if the 49ers win one more game than Jimmy Garoppolo and Aaron Rodgers retires, Jimmy Garoppolo will have been to more Super Bowls than Aaron Rodgers. You know? Like, that's a stat for you. you know, I think that Rodgers – I said this on the podcast on Saturday night when we were recapping those Saturday games. And I repeated it, you know, over the last 2 days. But I think people – smart football analysts know that you can't take a single football game and put too much weight on it in terms of the outcomes that it creates, you know, both long and short term. I mean, it's still 60 minutes, right? It's a game. There's so much variance in professional football, and so much crazy stuff can happen that it would be outrageous to, you know, put all of this onto, you know, a 60 minute game. But I think you can kind of do it for that game, because coming in, I was like 90% sure Rodgers is back with the Packers next year, that he returns to Green Bay, you know, after, you know, either winning a Super Bowl or making a pretty good run. And then to lose like that, you know, to have special teams let you down, to have your offense, you know, maybe you're hamstrung a little bit by play calling and decision making. And not that I think he's mad at Matt LaFleur, but just at a certain point, if you're Aaron Rodgers, how many of those losses can you take? I mean, it's ridiculous. They have had just some of the worst luck in the postseason, in just in terms of these close matchups at home, whether it's just the, you know, and I mean, I think that wears on you eventually. And, you know, I would have, again, 90%+ that he was coming back. Now I feel like it's like 60. And here today that there's rumors the Broncos might hire Nathaniel Hackett, his offensive coordinator. If they do that, you know, what does that mean for Rodgers? You know, the Steelers interested. If Tom Brady walks away, does Rodgers just say, you know, screw it, I'm going to the Buccaneers? I mean, there's all kinds of just ramifications from that loss to the 49ers that are starting to unfold now because of that. And it's just wild that a 60-minute game, and basically one play, like that blocked punt, is basically going to have this insane butterfly effect on professional football.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously a lot more to it. You know, 0-4, last four NFC championship games, 0-4 against San Francisco. I wonder what you read, though, when he says, listen, if I'm coming back, a rebuild really isn't my thing. Is he talking about Green Bay? Is he talking about a different scenario? Will Brinson, what was your analysis when Aaron Rodgers says that about if he's going to play next year, it's not going to be in a rebuilding situation?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of thought that was a little bit obvious. Like, did anybody think he was going to be coming back to do a rebuild? I would guess that, I mean, if he's talking, I mean, doesn't he have to be talking about Green Bay with the, or do you have to, I don't know, Darren.
Is that the thought, though, that Green Bay now, because of contracts, and you probably would know a million times more than I, but is that the situation that they're in, that they're going to have to do a bunch of things differently based on expiring contracts or people getting paid in salary caps and things like that?
I don't think it's that bad. I have to double check. I mean, Devontae Adams is a free agent. Obviously, you know, you're going to lose players in the offseason. It's sort of the nature of the beast for anything.
Right. You can franchise.
I don't view Green Bay as a quote unquote rebuild. I mean, they're a rebuild if Rodgers doesn't come back. You know, they're, if they've got Jordan Love, they're rebuilding with Jordan Love, and it's definitely a rebuild because that's probably a 5-win team without Aaron Rodgers last year. I would think that. I mean, I guess what he's, I mean, I think what he's saying is, I want to play to win a title. Or maybe he was saying, you know, I'm done with Green Bay, but I'm not going to go somewhere that's a rebuild. I don't know. It was a very curious statement, but it was certainly a pointed statement, I think, as well. And something that he does frequently, make pointed statements. It would be, you know, fairly surprising if Rodgers doesn't say stuff that he doesn't know has a particular meaning to it. So it's, I don't know exactly how to interpret it, but it definitely has a specific interpretation that he has in mind, I think.
Yeah, and I'm sure whoever the targeted audience was, I'm sure that person or those people probably, that landed with them as well. Do you look at Denver on the surface? Well, again, not doing like deep enough. Is Denver obviously a better scenario for Aaron Rodgers than Green Bay? Like, I just don't see it. I don't really get that at all.
Well, one of the other things, too, is that with Green Bay, you know, he's developed a rapport with all these receivers, right? Even, you know, Alan Lazard, MBS, Of course, Davante Adams, who's fantastic. He also, I mean, that's where he's been his entire career. He knows the ins and outs of that building, the ins and outs of that city. It's also a city that I think, insulates him a little bit from criticism. He got nationally criticized for the vaccine stuff and the immunization stuff. But, you know, if he's in New York, it's a whole different ballgame. It's never ceasing, right? With or Washington, there's a bunch of different places where it would Philadelphia, of course, Dallas, you know, where it would just, well, I guess in Texas, they build up a statue. But, you know, the point being is that, like, this is a place in Green Bay where, because it's a small market, small media, you know, Rodgers has been there forever. I mean, he could kind of say and do whatever he wants. And it was a YOLO season in that sense for him, I felt like. So I sort of believe that he might go, you know what? I do have a lot of freedom in terms of, when I'm, like, in terms of on the field and off the field when he's in Green Bay. Would he want to try and go restart that somewhere else? Denver specifically, they do have a ton of skill position guys. The offensive line, not as good when they're both at full health, but they have some nice players. And then defensively, you would think that team probably has a little bit better defense than the Broncos. And actually, now that I think about it, I've forgotten this. The Packers, I believe, this is crazy, but I did see this last night. Everything's kind of a fever dream. I think the Packers are $40 million over the salary cap next year already, which is which is quite a bit of money. And that's, that's obviously, that's looking at for 2022. Yeah. 2022 right now, as it stands, they have negative $40.11 million in cap space. So that's probably what Rodgers was talking about. Apologies for forgetting that. Rodgers is a $46.8 million cap hit, right?
Yeah.
Za'Darius Smith, 27.6. David Bakhtiari, 22.7. This does not count anything with Davante Adams because he's not under contract, and they would probably have to franchise tag him. That's an immediate, when he signs that tag, that hits the cap right away. So they have to keep room for that. Jair Alexander on a rookie deal, set to make some money. Rashawn Gary going to make some money as well. Now that Preston Smith probably gone, you'd save like $12 million. You can get there pretty easy with some of these guys, but the reality is they're going to have to cut some of these players. This is to get under the cap if Rodgers is on the roster next year. So if Rodgers comes back and, doesn't want to, I doubt he'll want to restructure his contract to lock himself in for, multiple years where the Packers can, control his rights. That was sort of the whole thing with him wanting to be traded. They're going to have to make some hard decisions when it comes to personnel. And if it looks like they're going to, they won't let Davante Adams walk. He's too good. If it come down to, having to, you can't cut Bakhtiari, but Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, that's $28 million in salary cap space. So you could get down to 12 over right there by cutting those two pass rushers. But you do that, and suddenly you have really, you've really taken away a lot from your defense, two big-time free agents that helped propel that defense the last few years. So, I think that's probably what he's talking about is if this team's got to reboot completely, if this team's got to cut everybody, all these veterans that I play with, and try to sort of retool on the fly, then he's probably not interested in it.
Kyle Shanahan has beaten Sean McVay, as this will be pointed out, 7 million times this week, 6 straight. They're heading into SoFi Stadium, home of the Super Bowl. It's an amazing storyline to think about it. Do you like riding with streaks, or do you find yourself talking yourself into, well, at some point this streak has to end and the Rams are definitely due to beat Kyle Shanahan?
I mean, we talk enough, Darren, that I think you could presume that this is a difficult situation for me. This is like a Sophie's choice with Matthew Stafford and hashtag my Niners, who I took to win the Super Bowl before the season, by the way.
Remember that. Yeah.
Would be lovely to go from 3-5 to actually looking like a genius plus financially beneficial. I have before the playoffs, I bet on the Niners and the Bengals in the Super Bowl, which would be at like 85-1. It would be quite the cash cow if that actually happened. At any rate, I do put stock into the trend because we're talking about a head coach in Kyle Shanahan that has a very good track record against his former assistants. And we just watched him. He squeaked by but he got by the, you know, a former assistant in Matt LaFleur, and he was able to, you know, minimize what LaFleur did on offense. That's a working knowledge of how your friend and former colleague wants to operate, and they did just enough to get by against a very good team in very difficult conditions. You know, the 49ers are a problem for the Rams, I think, because they're strong up front. They can pressure Matthew Stafford without having to blitz a bunch, and you know they have their ability to stop the run, and then they can run on you. And if that offensive line is completely healthy for the 49ers, it really neutralizes one of the Rams' biggest strengths. So, yeah, I mean, I think Rams could easily win. I mean, they're up 17-0 at half against the 49ers in week 7 or week 18, right? I mean, they still won the division thanks to Seattle. It wouldn't shock me at all if they won. I think they're playing great football. I think the defensive stars that they have make life very difficult. But that's the other thing, too, is like, you know, against the Bucs, you have Jalen Ramsey, who you can just put on Mike Evans most of the time, right? Or if Mike Evans is lighting you up, you rotate Ramsey over there. Against the 49ers, you can't really stick Jalen Ramsey on Deebo Samuel with the way that Kyle Shanahan utilizes him. You know, you're not gonna put Jalen Ramsey on George Kittle, because half the time Kittle's blocking, and then half the time a quarter of the time it's play action and he's leaking out, and so you can't just have Ramsey down there in the box against Kittle. So I mean, it's sort of like, just the way that the 49ers personnel and scheme matches up against the Rams stars and scrubs roster, not stars and scrubs, but like star laden roster, I think sort of neutralizes the benefit of a few of those stars.
So San Francisco, Kansas City?
San Francisco, Cincinnati?
San Francisco, Cincinnati.
I don't really want to bet against Joe Burrow, I don't think. I got to tell you, I mean, like, I think these. So the Chiefs are -7 and the Rams are -3.5. I think those are great lines. It's impossible for me. I would take the Bengals +7. I just think that's too many points for, you know, a team that beat the Chiefs just a few weeks ago and has the offensive firepower to hang with Kansas City. Also, you know, when you look at the Niners and the Bengals, they have an extra day of rest. That's pretty huge. You know, I mean, that makes a big difference, especially for teams that, you know, the Chiefs just played late Sunday night in overtime. I don't think any combination should be ruled out. You know, I think the Niners can beat the Rams. I mean, I think that game is a kind of a toss up. And in my mind, the Bengals and Chiefs could be a lot closer than people expect. But certainly, if the Chiefs blew out the Bengals, it wouldn't be entirely shocking.
Well, you're the man. We appreciate you. Everybody, go find the Pick 6 podcast, subscribe to it, give it 5 stars wherever it is that you find podcasts. Will, we thank you so much.
All right, Darren. See you, man.
You got it. Will Brinson, everybody. Pick